I never heard of what karmic relationships were. I had really no understanding for what I was entering into when I entered into my own karmic relationship.
Welcome to the Ecstatic Woman Podcast. Together, along with some amazing guests, we'll explore and tap into our inner wisdom and have meaningful conversations about developing our ability to self-discover, create, and be present in the world, while also uncovering new ways to think, feel, and cultivate our sense of empowerment so we can live our lives ecstatically. Now let's welcome our host, Alara Sage.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another wonderful episode of the Ecstatic Woman Podcast, where we activate, inspire women in their authenticity, in their power, and in their bliss. I'm your host, Alara Sage. And my beloveds, you know, I'm sure you've had that feeling, right, where you meet somebody and it's like just instant comfort, instant click, instant, like you guys have known each other perhaps for many lives, right? Perhaps for other experiences. And we've all had this experience more than once throughout our lives. And we know these to be, you know, karmic relationships. There's lots of different kinds of karmic relationships. And today we're going to start to dive into this topic with our wonderful guest, Jessica Falcon. Jessica, it was a former lawyer turned mystic. I just love that in and of itself. And she's an international soul embodiment guide and divine feminine activator. She is here. We're in the right place, aren't we? And she guides you to embody your divinity, reclaim your sovereignty so you can create freedom in your relationships. Jessica, my love, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's such a pleasure. I'm excited for this deep dive into karmic relationships.
Yeah. So I want to just start with a generic question of what does karmic relationship mean to you?
Generally, so I first have to define what karma means to me, because there are a lot of varied definitions out there. So when I particularly speak of karma, it is the belief that our soul comes into this life with, or an experience our soul comes into this life with, that is then affecting us and our choices and our actions, usually unconsciously, though sometimes consciously. I don't necessarily see it as something that is a form of punishment, right? So this is a way that we come in. This is soul imprints, energetic imprints in our energetic or emotional body that are affecting us. And so when we bring that into the context of relationships, that is when we have a, you could say a bond, often they're bonds when they're karmic relationships, with another person. And this could be an intimate relationship with a partner. This could be a family member. This could be a child. This could be a colleague at work, right? Where you're just like, there's something there. Can't explain it. I just know it. Okay. So when you have this, there's this usually a sense of recognition, knowing, familiarity, but it may not always be positive. It could go both ways. And then often when you feel that level of intensity and that level of like, I know you, it can go into a previous relationship, encounter, experience with each other that wasn't complete. The soul in some way on both sides may have given their power over to the other person. And this is an opportunity to identify that and pull it back.
Yes, wonderful. And I really love how you're pointing to it's not always enjoyable, right? Some of those relationships are quite challenging. And I want to start there because I think it's something we often don't think about or consider. Karma can absolutely be, you know, something that brings us a lot of joy, a lot of positivity, and it can also bring us a lot of challenge, right? And so let's start and dive in to, you know, the relationships that aren't so easy. It reminds me of, I had these two women in my high school that just chose to hate me. Like, I had spent very, very little time with them. And they were friends of my friends. and they were older. And they just decided, you know what, we don't like you. And they attempted to turn my friends against me. And it was so interesting because my friend even asked one of them, because it was her cousin. She was like, why do you hate her so much? And she's like, I don't know, I just hate her. And, you know, of course, back then it was like, wow, this is really intense. And there's a lot going on. And since then, you know, I've come to so much reclamation and healing with that as it being a karmic life. And I think it's so empowering and often not spoken about how our enemies, quote unquote, right? The people who can sometimes really come in and cause us some pain can be those karmic relationships. So can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to tie in my own experience if that feels appropriate with this as well. Because so often, I, growing up, never heard of the word karma. I never heard of what karmic relationships were. I had really no understanding for what I was entering into when I entered into my own karmic relationship. And, you know, not every intense relationship is karmic, right? But we know, we can know it's karmic when it feels like there's so much more than meets the eye to the interaction, to the encounter. It's really an opportunity for our soul to heal a deep wound, to come back into union, to reclaim its power. And so these relationships, we just know there's way more to it that we have to discover. We can't just brush it aside or blame the other person, even though we might want to do those things, right? It's an opportunity. And anytime we are growing into soul and our divinity, right, we take everything in life happening as an opportunity to be more and more in our power and more in our truth. And so when we have difficult relationships, then instead of looking at, okay, what is the problem here? Like, why is this so bad? Why is this so hard? What we often do, right? Kind of even going unconsciously into victimhood, like, why is this happening to me? Look at, okay, why is this happening to me from an empowered perspective? Like, why is this showing up in my life? What is something I can do and know and witness in this situation to come back into my power? And I wish I'd known these things before my own experience. I'll start to kind of go into that if that feels okay. So after I left the legal profession, I went to Europe on a spiritual pilgrimage because my soul desperately called me to go do that despite years of resistance, because it was so irresponsible to leave the legal profession according to my linear mind. Even though my soul was like, I have very clear other plans for you in this lifetime. So I finally surrendered and I went to France. And I had a plan for 1 week. I didn't know what I was doing after that. I was just following my intuition. Now, I'd had a dream 7 months prior to leaving that I was supposed to arrive in the Mountain of Mary Magdalene, La Saint-Baume, on August 31st or September 1st. And then I kind of just forgot about that. Well, I intuitively arrived on the Mountain of Mary Magdalene on September 1st. And as I started hiking up the trail, which is this gorgeous, gorgeous trail. It's a 45-minute strenuous hike up this gravel road to the grotto or the chapel of Mary Magdalene. And I'm hiking up the trail after obstacle upon obstacle to get there on the day I dreamt of. And I hear a voice in my head as a man in front of me comes onto the trail and his back is to me. And the voice says, he's your soulmate. And I was like, that's crazy. First of all, I'm here for Mary Magdalene. I'm not here for a man. Second, I haven't seen his eyes. How in the world am I supposed to know he's my soulmate? Because in my mind, that was how you were supposed to know. And so I go to the grotto. I have my experience. I'm there for a good hour and a half, 2 hours. I start walking back down the 150 steps that lead up to the cave. And I turn around to my right, and the same man is walking down behind me. And so I got pretty nervous and kept walking quickly. And he passed me, stopped, passed me again, stopped. Third try, he passes me and ends up walking next to me and starts speaking to me in French. And at the time, I barely spoke any French other than enough to order at a restaurant and say my name. And so I asked him if he spoke English. He said yes, though he didn't actually speak that much English. And we ended up talking all the way down to the base of the mountain. We get to this, because this is how this can start, right? Is this fairy tale romance. So we get down to the base of the mountain. He asked me if I want to have lemonade at the only cafe in the area. I said, sure. Of course, I ordered red wine. I didn't want to drink lemonade in France. We sit at the little cafe. He takes off his sunglasses for the first time. And I saw it, the light shining in his eyes. And my mouth was probably agape, open, in shock. And fast forward to the next night, he drove another hour and a half to come see me again because I said I was leaving 2 days later. And we end up under this tree and we're dancing and we are shooting stars. I mean, it was literally so fairy tale, so romantic. And so I wanted to see him again. And he would meet me as I continued traveling in various cities and various towns. And after several months of that, he invited me to move in with him as he was being transferred to another job in Belgium. And I said yes, because I had nowhere else to go. It's not like I had a career to return back to. I left everything, sold everything, gotten rid of everything. And I didn't want to have regrets. I wanted to see, you know, what this was, because it felt so intense. We were so magnetically drawn to each other, which is often how it works. You feel this almost overwhelming intense attraction and magnetism with that person. And I felt as if I was in love. I felt that deeply. And we ended up, a month after I arrived back in France from being in England for a few months, moving in together. And the day we moved in together, he started to interrogate me on my past, my sexual past, and discovered that I wasn't a virgin, which I assumed if that was important, he would have asked me before we had sex the first time and before we moved in together, but he didn't until the day we moved in together. And called me a whore because I was not a virgin. And it was incredibly shocking because we had not had any of these discussions prior to this, other than a few random questions of, have you had any serious partners? You know, like relationships. We'd never really talked about anything else. And in that moment, despite having been a women's rights advocate for over 10 years, having been a criminal prosecutor and lawyer for 7, having spoken at rallies, met women in hospitals, like you name it, I was a huge feminist and felt quite liberated in my sexuality, felt quite liberated in who I was at the time. And yet, despite all of that, when this man, whom I loved, had this deep soul connection to, karmic connection to, called me a whore, I literally took it as a punch in my gut and hung my head in shame and apologized because I wasn't who he wanted me to be. And I allowed that shame to enter me because I was seeing myself through his eyes, not my own. And that started the rest of our time together of me consistently apologizing for who I was. Me consistently apologizing for being too powerful, too charismatic, traveled too much, knew too much, had too many friends. Everything about me threatened him. And eventually, it wasn't even okay to say no to sex, even though, ironically, that was the thing he shamed me for, because he was allowed to desire it, but I was not allowed to desire it. And this sent me on a very deep internal soul journey to understand what was happening and why, because I wanted to get to the root of how I could know mentally that none of this was okay. But my body didn't feel that way. My subconscious, my emotions didn't feel that way. And I felt this big disconnect. And I wanted to get to the root of what that was. And eventually, my spiritual guides and my soul helped me remember that going into my body was the key to starting to come back into myself. So I started to spend a lot of time with my womb and my body and started to be more conscious of how I felt. I had quite a wake-up call with him. And I realized I'd completely lost myself, completely couldn't even recognize myself anymore. Because I was so busy trying to make myself who he would find lovable, who he would find good and worthy. And it meant I kept coming further out of my body and more into him and less in me, which is so common in relationships. It's so common that we, particularly if we're not already deeply embodied and sovereign, that we get so caught up in what other people want and how they think and what they feel. And I was so lost in that until I started to anchor into my body, anchor into my own emotions. And then I made a commitment to speak my truth no matter what, no matter what my fears were, because I did fear his anger, his rage, his violence. He wasn't, quote, violent with me physically, but he would be physically violent around me, which is the same result, fear. The same result is fear. And so, very long story short, I eventually left. And when I did, I was guided to start studying ancient mythology, ancient civilizations, religious history, and comparing that to my own experience, to my own subconscious beliefs that I was able to identify through my own healing of this trauma and my own healing of the experience. Before I go into that, because I'd love to go into that, how that relates to the story of Adam and Eve, I'd love to go into that. But I first want to say that it wasn't until I left I even understood it was a karmic relationship. And as I started to uncover this, I realized I did know very quickly after we moved in together, I would have these moments of like, it felt like the room was like entering another dimension where I'd feel like this, wait, where are we? Like, is he's not him in this life. Somehow there's something else going on. And I did start to feel a few of those moments kind of tuning me into that. And I later uncovered that he had actually been my master in another life. I was his slave, and he had killed me several times. And that this life, and this is through deep inner inquiry, spiritual guidance, and embodiment work, that I discovered that he had literally owned me, quote, as you don't actually own a soul, but he had believed that he'd owned me, he'd owned my physical self in several lifetimes. And that was the same belief he had in this one, that he owned me. He told me I was not allowed to leave. I was not allowed to say no. I was not allowed, as most women have been told for millennia, I was not allowed to have a self separate from him. And so he acted based on that belief system. And my karma with him was, you're right. I'm not allowed. I don't have a choice. And I was also very much reliving that story of Eve. We were like reliving Adam and Eve, in which all women in this story, which was written over a period of 700 years,
wow,
from about 1200 BC until 586 BC, when it was codified into what we now know as the Hebrew Bible or Old Testament. So 700 years, that's important because we are told this is simply the word of God. And the reality is that this was written with very intentional political motivations over a 700 year period that scholars have been able to identify four groups of writers, each with their own political ideology. And then they put it together in this story with a new belief system that was not in place prior to this. Prior to the story of Adam and Eve, women were sovereign and free, and the goddess was worshipped and revered. And this new belief system that was put into place basically took away a woman's divinity and said, you are no longer recognized as a soul. You are simply an object for the benefit of man. And then the way the story was written was very specifically, my research shows and my own spiritual guidance, is that this was written as a very intentional warning to women who worshipped the goddess and therefore believed they were holy because they're one and the same. If you believe there is a goddess, you believe women are holy. And so this was written as a very clear warning based on the literature at that time that if you dare choose for yourself, if you dare think of yourself, if you dare trust yourself and your desires, you will be punished. And at the time, during this 700-year period and prior to that, women were literally killed and raped in order to effectuate what I call this new world order. And this is important because we're not usually taught this, right? This history. I was never taught this history. And we don't realize that these beliefs, even though they were written well over 2,000 years ago, A, we don't know that prior to that, it wasn't the case, and women were sovereign and free and recognized as holy, that this isn't the way it's always has been. But more importantly, we're not told that these beliefs have been passed down womb to womb, generation to generation, and that fear and that shame of our sexuality, of our body, of our selves, like that unworthiness that is carried down through the bloodline, carried down through the conditioning we receive as a result, is still very present today in our subconscious mind, which is our feeling state, which is our body.
Yeah. And present in our wombs and present in our pussies and present in, you know, all of our reproductive system. And it's interesting because, you know, your relationship was with a man, but it doesn't have to be with a man. Like even the relationship I was saying with those two women, you know, it was short, right? I really experienced them for maybe like 2 years of my high school career and, you know, in the big scheme of life, right? But it was similar in the context of when I went into that relationship energetically and felt everything. It was the unwillingness to stand up for myself, right? And say, no, like, I'm not going to take that on. And I took their perspective and that shame, and I carried it. And I agreed to it. And I think it's so important to recognize that because, again, while your relationship was with a man, these karmic relationships can be with other women and can be just as filled with just as much shame, right? Because we've also been taught in this process of we're not allowed to do this, that, hey, we got to push each other down too, right? Because what happens if one of us is beginning to rise or whatever it is, these are very subconscious beliefs. So they weren't seeing me. Those girls weren't seeing me like that, right? They just had this subconscious belief structure that was like, whatever she is, we have to push her down. Like, it's not okay. We can't let her be her. And that shame, woman to woman, you know, the competition, the backstabbing, all of that is along the same energy and also within our womb. And it's so important right now for us as women to be acknowledging this. And I love how you bring in Adam and Eve because, you know, when the time of that was written, we were so asleep as humans. We were so, you know, our consciousness had dropped and we would really receive what we were given. And particularly in any context of fear, right? Like, do this or this happens, right? Do this or you go to hell.
Like, that's really scary if you don't have any direct connection to divinity in yourself. If you don't understand what happens after death, if you can't feel that, and somebody who supposedly knows what they're talking about is telling you that, hey, if you don't follow these rules, you'll go to hell. And if you're a woman, these are these rules and you better follow them. You know, so that's really taken on in the subconscious mind, in the body, and as you said, passed down womb to womb and through the genetics. And I think it's so profound to draw awareness to, because sometimes I think some people don't really necessarily fully understand how rooted these belief structures are in our bodies. And they run so very, very deep.
They're incredibly rooted in our bodies. And I think when we recognize that this isn't your fault, right? This isn't because something is wrong with you that you have these beliefs, that we collectively are facing and confronting these beliefs that are so deeply embedded in the subconscious and conscious minds of those around the world, regardless of what religion system they have. Because these beliefs were before religion as we know it. They were just later encoded into the story of Adam and Eve. And so we have the opportunity to uncover the ways in which we have adopted that fear, as you said, that shame. Because what is shame? Shame is seeing ourselves through the eyes of others, not through the eyes of our soul. So when we take in the external instead of deepening into the internal truth of who we are, and when we can do that, we can start to release those layers of shame. And we can't anchor into the truth of who we are if we're told the divine is only outside of us, which is exactly what this belief system said. The divine is only out there, even outside of man. The difference is that men were granted divine authority over women, but the divine was still outside of man, according to this as well. And so we have all suffered from this. And what I specifically want to highlight about what you shared about this karmic relationship with the women you experienced in high school is that, yes, absolutely, we as women, when we're told, as in the story of Adam and Eve, when we're told that our value as women is based solely on whether or not a man desires us, be it a father or a husband, generally one could also be considered your slave owner or master. Unless that person desires to have you around, you have no other way of survival. Like, your survival is dependent on being desired, therefore being the most attractive, being the most valuable for what you do or give. And what that created was complete separation between women, which prior to this were in temples together. And, you know, women were they knew the importance of gathering in sacred temple space together. But this separated women because it says to them, wait, I actually now have to fight against you because we're not both allowed to be valuable. We're not both allowed to be worthy. It's either me or you, and it's survival based. And that makes it even harder to overcome it.
I went into a parallel / past life very much in this context where I was a sex slave and there was an heir harem. And, you know, it was literally, this was in my sexual energy, in my cervix. My mother of this life was also in the harem, not as my mother, but as another woman. We weren't related. And while I was in my cervix working on this, because yes, it was all about like being the sexiest, being the most desired, because literally your food, your safety, your entire life was rooted in the ability to be that. And if you weren't that, you would be thrown out or killed. I don't know what would happen, but it was like I felt my connection to food and resources being tied up in the being able to be desired sexually. And I was in my cervix working through all of this when I got a phone call from my father, and he says, hey, I have to tell you something. And I was like, what? And he said, your mom has been diagnosed with cervical cancer.
Oh.
I didn't even know she was sick because it's such an advanced cancer. And I was like,
I'm not surprised. You know, I tell my parents everything. So it was like, we were able to have the conversation and, you know, she's now in remission, but it was like, yeah, that's exactly where I was. I was literally in that karmic relationship between me and her and this other being and all the other women and everything that transpired, because there was so many layers to it, you know, so many layers to it. And, you know, it's wonderful when we, I find it beyond fascinating. I find it so beautifully empowering. And it also is that reclamation, right? When we get to experience those lives, see what happened, understand and take our power back, right? Bring in the forgiveness, release the quantum entanglement, and really come to resolution with that in our own bodies. It's so powerful. And so back to this karmic relationship thing, you know, whether it's one that brings us, you know, a lot of peace and joy and connection, or if it brings us a lot of challenge, if we're willing, like you were, to move through the energies and recognize what is really here for us, right? There's so much that we reclaim for ourselves.
That's the purpose, right, of the karmic relationship, as you said, is to reclaim ourselves, to reclaim our power, because this isn't just happening like willy-nilly for no reason at all. Like, the reason we have these encounters is because, for me, I view the soul ultimately desires to go home. We have given pieces of ourselves away. We have given our power away. We've looked outside of ourselves. We've seen the divine outside of us. Right? We've played all these roles in all these different lifetimes. But ultimately, for me, to embody our divinity is to come home to self, to come home to soul. And that requires that we see the ways we have not only given our power away, but forgotten our own divine truth, forgotten who we really are, forgotten our connection to all things, forgotten how to source love from within, how to source belonging and safety from within. And we have to release the fears, the shame, the guilt. I call these kind of the wounds of Eve, because this is exactly what the story shows is perpetuated on humanity. It's the fear, shame, doubt, blame, guilt, and unworthiness. And those are keeping us from anchoring into the truth of our divinity. And so we are releasing, we're releasing, we're releasing. And as we're releasing all the beliefs, right, the soul traumas and karmas, we're anchoring more into the light of who we are. And with that comes the opening of our ecstatic life force, which is free flowing energy. And I love that you brought up the womb, because it is a portal to all of this, as you know, and it holds so much. And yet our womb is also where our life force energy really begins to activate. And if we can't receive it, if our channels aren't open, we can't feel ecstasy. We can't feel joy. We can't be fully alive and thrive if we are bound and gripping onto these old ways of being. And so we have to be willing to see and look at, oh, why is this in front of me? What is this showing me? Am I free in this relationship? Am I free to be me? Am I free to express my truth? Am I received in my truth? Am I received when I reveal all of me? Am I received in love? Am I heard in love? Am I able to be sexual and be received? Am I able to be powerful and be received? And this isn't something we can run away from. My internal guidance made it very clear to me, I cannot run away from this relationship, this karmic relationship. I have to clear this 120% for my soul's freedom. My soul's freedom is what I am devoted to. And that means if you're devoted to your soul's freedom, to embodying your divinity, you've got to look in your relationships as mirrors for like, what do you need to see to come back home to you? What do you need to see? And for most women, these beliefs are running subconsciously, and it's how we've kept ourselves from our divine power. And men have different belief systems they often have to face. And we've got to be willing, right, to do that work.
Yeah. And I love how you're speaking to the men as well, because I'm a firm believer that, you know, this society that we have been in hasn't served either side, in all honesty, right? And most of the men, you know, this wasn't their desire. They're not bad. They're not wrong, right? They've been given their own set of belief structures. And we've been going through this process together, right? And so together we must heal. And it's not us against them and the men or the patriarchy or whatever. You know, it is really about our own inner journey so that we can all, you know, reveal that divinity within and really come into union as we seek so deeply, so desperately, you know, that intimate, sacred space of union. And so exactly. I love how you brought it back to like the questions. I love questions and how you were inviting the audience to ask those questions. What else would you say to the audience of what they can do if they know they have a karmic relationship, be it intimate relationship, a family member, right? A coworker, or even like a friend, right? What can you recommend to them to help them?
Okay. So one of the things that I think is most helpful to point to in response to your question is that we can try to do this work with the other person, right? It doesn't have to be like, oh, this person's bad or this thing I have to heal and I have to do it all on my own. It's possible to open up the door to conversations with the other person, right? To heal this with both of you. However, I made the mistake of doing that and wanting my partner to do his own work, but he never actually did, right? And so I kept waiting for him to change. He would use the words, but his actions wouldn't follow. And I started to see the discrepancy between you're saying all of the right things, but you're not actually doing any of the things. You're saying you're going to stop, but you're not actually stopping. And that incongruence between words and actions is something very important to look for. Because if you are in conversation with somebody in a karmic relationship and they're telling you one thing, but they consistently are doing something else, that's a red flag to say, okay, I'm going to stop giving my power over and letting this person decide. I'm going to decide for me. Am I going to tolerate this or not? Is this love? Because most often it's not. And if it's not love, why am I tolerating anything but love? What within me isn't yet clear that I'm worthy only of love? And how can I heal that and come back into love in myself so that I can operate from overflow, not from lack? So that I can allow love to flow forth from me, not at my expense. And that is the most important thing we need to ask ourselves.
Yeah, and I love how you say that you can absolutely potentially do it with the person. And it really depends on, like you said, if the congruency is there, you know, what availability they have to the conversation. There's lots of different things that would say whether or not that's possible. And so for some circumstances, it will be possible. Others, there will be not. And, you know, the only person that can answer that is the person that's in the relationship, as well as it's amazing how relationships change when we change, right? So for me, the relationships that, like my family members, that I pulled away from, but it was never a circumstance that I needed to like cut them off or anything like that, and did my own internal work. And how they have transformed, and we have been able to come together in a much more healthier and just loving manner. And we didn't have to do it together.
I was responsible for my side, but I also didn't have to like burn the bridge down, you know, push them away. Like, you know, and that was just my experience with those relationships. And so each person has to really define that for themselves. And I think it's really important, specifically for women, to be really clear, right? Is the relationship, communicating with this person, being around this person, is it serving to me, right? Is it loving to me? And if being around that person and communicating with them is not, then create that space, right? Because you can do the work on your own, and they are, may or may not evolve and change on their own. And it's just so important to delineate that. And I love how you say, you know, that it doesn't have to be done together, because I think that's a lot of times what we think. Like, if this is going to heal between us karmically, we got to be in the pot together, right? But it's so multidimensional, and we're healing things just simply by going inward, recognizing our part of it. That's the only part that we're responsible for anyways, is our side of it. And if we can forgive ourselves, release those energies from ourselves, we've released that karma.
Exactly. Yes. It that we can only do our 50%, right? Of the,
yes.
of the two-person relationship. And then we, when we try, as I tried, to take responsibility for the other person's half, that's when we're giving our power away. Because instead of being responsible to me, I was trying to take responsibility for him too. And that was not true love. That was self-sacrifice. That was self-denial. And that's where you have to be careful, because particularly as women, but even men, we've been conditioned to believe love is something it's not. So we can get very easily confused about equating self-sacrifice with love. Yes. And that is a big one we've got to unravel ourselves from. And that's why it could be helpful to have a guide, because it's not easy to unravel the emotions connected to that, the energetic imprints of that, the mental thoughts of that. It is a process of unraveling from these beliefs, which are so deep. And I love how you said as well that we can experience relationship differently by doing our own inner work. Because as we're coming into and seeing these patterns within ourselves, that's when we put up a new boundary, whether that boundary be a spoken word, whether that boundary be a new energetic shield that no longer lets in the attack, or that no longer lets in the judgment, it stays outside of you, whether that be a boundary of leaving the relationship, all of that is internal work. Always. Always internal. And then sometimes that's enough, an energetic boundary. I'm not taking in the judgmental words, creates huge freedom now in the relationship, because, oh, well, all that stuff I took in and made about me and thought was personal, now it doesn't get to come in. I realize it's not about me. It's not personal. I feel pretty free. I'm okay to accept this person now. I can actually just enjoy it now, right?
Yes, yes. And I think the other side of it is, you know, a lot of these relationships are complicated in the context of, I know that my ex-husband and the father of my children was a soulmate for me. Very similar to you, except different in I just completely lost myself in his space, completely just shrank down. And, you know, I had a very strong intuitive hit. You have to leave this relationship. And from the outside, it seemed perfect. I mean, he's a really good person. We hardly fought. You know, we didn't have a fighting relationship, but it didn't matter. I was giving my power away. And when my higher self told me this, I was like, it was just so apparent to me. And yet I knew it was going to be nothing easy, right? My parents got upset with me. Everybody got upset with me because it was like, what are you doing? This is such a great relationship. You have everything you want. You're going to break up your family because of this? You're going to do this to your kids because you don't want to be in this relationship anymore because you just want to leave it, bail, abandon, you know? And I was in enough of my power to know that I didn't need their support and I had to do it for myself. And so
those kinds, I think with kids and things like that, you know, the idea of like breaking up a marriage or breaking up a family or this thing like, well, it appears okay from the outside. What's your problem? Just go to marriage counseling. It's like, it actually wasn't even about our marriage. It was about me. It was like, I just kept giving him my power. Like I needed to be out of his space so that I could be like, who am I now? I don't even know who I am. Like I have to refigure it out, you know? And these are the things that are deeply interwoven and take great courage. However, again, just like kind of you said, once you were out of it, it's almost like the more you get out of it, the more you look back and you're like, wow.
Exactly.
Right? Like, you're like, wow. I mean, because I could feel it. But once I was out of it, I was like, oh my God, like my chest moves with breath, you know, like I don't feel like I'm taking really shallow breaths or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And what you said, I want to highlight the importance of trusting the self because it is incredibly courageous. And that trust of whether you call it the soul, the higher self, that is our way back home. It knows what our mind can't know. It knows what no one around us can know. And that is how we embody our divinity and create inner union is through deep trust of our inner knowing and self. And something that I find really helpful is that despite our mind's concerns and society's ideas about what's good or bad or right or wrong, which are all ideas, which are all thoughts, which are all beliefs, which are all based on what somebody else said at some point in time, which are not deep truth. What is good for the soul is ultimately good for everyone.
Yes. Yes.
The soul yep. bypasses time and space. It knows more
yes.
than the human mind can ever comprehend. Yep. When we trust that, it can be nothing but good.
Yes. It truly is the higher good for all. Yes.
It is. That doesn't mean we don't have our emotional attachments and Absolutely. Feelings of pain and loss, yeah. but that's part of the human experience. And the more in union you are with you, the easier it is to allow those emotions to move through you with consciousness and no longer identify with them. And then that's even more freedom.
Yes, 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 yes. Beautiful. Absolutely. So my love, how can people find you? How can they reach out to you?
So my website's thepathtosovereignty.com. And I want to mention a free gift that is really helpful for this. So it's about creating internal safety in your body so that you can start to reclaim your power and sovereignty. So it's on the website, thepathtosovereignty.com. Of course, creating deep levels of internal safety is a journey, right? This is a little taste of a teaching and an embodiment practice to begin to create that feeling inside. Because when we feel safe, we can be in our power and we can speak our truth and we can liberate our sexuality and activate our life force. But we can't do any of those things if we don't feel safe to be who we are. So it really does start within. And also on Instagram, Facebook, The Path to Sovereignty, YouTube, The Path to Sovereignty.
Beautiful. Always so easy when they're all the same.
Yeah.
People don't remember like four different things.
The only hiccup is spelling sovereignty, right?
Yes, that's not it. I never get it right. Never, ever, ever do I get that right.
E before I.
Thank God for spell check.
It's been such a pleasure to be here today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, my love, for coming on here and sharing your story as well as your wisdom and your personal experience. I appreciate you so very much.
Thank you. Great. Thank you for having me, Nichelle.
And to the audience, thank you so much for joining us here today. Make sure you reach out to Jessica, get that free gift, and even just get into some contemplation, some curiosity, perhaps, of, ooh, what are my karmic relationships right now? Do I have any that are going on right now? And become curious so that you can begin that practice with yourself. I am so grateful for your time, your presence here with us today. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The Ecstatic Woman. Much love to you.
Thank you for being a part of The Ecstatic Woman podcast. As you experience each new day, we want you to feel that you are capable of tapping into your inner wisdom and living your life ecstatically. If you want to be invited back to the next episode, just subscribe to our podcast. And if you need more information in the meantime, go to alarasage.com.